All right. Hey, what's going on? It's Bill Burr, and it's time for a special episode of the Monday Morning Podcast. It's not on Monday. It's not on Thursday. It's coming out, I guess, what, Tuesday, Wednesday? We're going to put this out as soon as we can. I have a special guest here. You know, I don't do a lot of guests, so if I bring somebody in, they got to be a heavy hitter.
That's right.
They got to be a mover, a shaker, a shot caller. We have the one and only Judd Apatow here.
Pleasure to be here.
Judd, how are you, buddy?
I like to be here. Usually you're all by yourself, just talking to the wall.
Yes, I am. And usually you're in the midst of producing, which fascinates me. I tried to talk to you about this because I like to think I'm kind of a busy man, too. How
yes.
You manage to have movies, TV shows, stand-up special, masterclass, documentary on Gary Shandling. How the fuck...
Management.
You keep all, like, how big is the bulletin, the war room?
It's all management technique. That's what you want to know. I'll tell you a good management technique. The staff of Crashing is in a room right now writing the fourth season. The third season comes on in January, but they're writing the fourth season, and I'm here with you.
Yes.
That's management.
So how do you check in with that?
How do I check in?
Every day, do they send you a draft and you just kind of keep it in bounds of where it needs to be? Or at season four, is it sort of up and running?
Well, usually what it is Pete and I and also Judah Miller and Oren, who work on the show, will kick around a little bit what we think the season might be.
Right.
We bring in writers for a month and we just kick it around very openly, like anything is on the table. And I'll pop in and out of those meetings, and then there's notes, and I'll read the notes and then sit in for half a day and then take a day off and then pop back in. And usually that gives me some perspective because you've been in those rooms. There's a lot of Chinese food. There's a lot of Danishes. You get tired.
Lunch is huge.
There's a lot of people talking about things that have nothing to do with the show for very long periods of time. And then at some point I'll sit with Pete and we'll go through everything.
Right.
And go, okay, which ideas do we like?
You know, my favorite thing is the mental break you take in the writer's room. It's like you're pitching, then you're fried. And like, I always look around the room and I'll just see someone hasn't pitched in a minute and they're just sort of staring down at the ground for about 15, 20 minutes. And then they just come back up. They're like, all right, what if Frank did that? But you literally, you have to do it. And, what I learned on Efforts for Family, though, was like I didn't realize how fried you get in the writer's room. And like my drinking went off the rails a little bit. It was one little scotch, and then it just became like three. So last season.
At what time of day, though, are you having your scotch in the room?
Oh, not in the room. No, it was when I got home. When I got home, I would literally just, you know, put on the fireplace, turn it on now because you don't light a fire anymore. You just turn it on. And then I would just sit there like. And I was getting to that shit. It was just like, I need this at the end of the day. So in season three, like I did this thing. I go, not only am I not drinking this season, I'm actually going to try to do the impossible, which is drop weight in the writer's room, which I did.
How did you do that?
I packed a lunch like I was a second grader.
So
every day that they would be going out. No, I had like this quinoa bean thing that I would always have. And then just fruit and nuts, you know, would be my snacks or whatever.
Because it's all reward. You want to reward yourself. You know, you get to work, whatever, 9, 10 o'clock, and all you think all morning is, I think at 12:30, the food's going to land.
Oh, yeah.
The food's going to land, then we could stop talking about this show food.
And if everybody voted a place that you fucking hate, it's just like that is the longest day ever. But if you're going to like, you know, it's like a Friday and they picked an awesome like lunch place, like that can literally, you pitch better.
But I like that you are not in charge of that because the only area I will throw my weight around is if they say, hey, we're going to eat here today, I'm very comfortable going, we are not going there today.
Yeah.
Daddy needs this today.
Right. No, there's definitely there's a generation gap, and that also goes with nutrition.
Yes.
You know, so there's people like my show takes place in the 70s. So there's people that grew up in the 70s. And there's other people who were born in the 80s. So they're more likely to go to something a little more healthy than the old sort of John Wayne people in the room are like, I'm not eating that shit. And some days there's a little bit of a mutiny, but it's not about the writers from here. I actually they sent me, which is really cool. Thank you. You guys sent me a link to the first episode of season three of Crashing with the great Pete Holmes. And just once again, it's like. Like watching that show, it's like I've lived this. I don't want to give away what the episode is about, but I mean, generally speaking, it's like Pete has now gotten to the point where he actually has his own place, which is awesome.
And he's mentoring a young man.
Yes.
Jabuki from The Daily Show, who's on The Daily Show now.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Who's great. And it's he finally feels cocky enough to give someone else advice.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah, he's sitting talking like he's in the mix. He's kind of feeling himself a little bit. And as always, this business will humble you. So he ends up getting humbled. And it's like just the way when he gets humbled, I don't want to say it is the way it's written that he then lashes out at this person that he kind of smooths stuff over with. And that's just like the worst, especially with the woman. And then you get that whole, you're enjoying this, aren't you? You're enjoying that. I mean, I literally had that fight with my wife like 2 days ago.
What was she enjoying?
That I lost my temper.
Yeah.
And then she gets to, how the deal is. You know, with women, nothing is off bounds. But like with you, you have to stay within the lines or else she'll never hear the end of it. So, she was driving the car all over the place, all over my life, letting me know who I was. But, she was right about a lot of it. And
that's the worst part is that they are right about a lot of it.
No, but they're also wrong. So this whole period now where women, like, they went from nobody listening to them to now everything that they say is spun with gold. It's just, it's getting ridiculous. It's like, we have to be, okay, let's women are like guys. A lot of them are just full of shit, as are men. So, I mean, that's the art of life is trying to figure out who actually has the information that you need, which is why when I talk to you, how to, manage a show, you have the goods with everything you got going on here.
Well, sometimes, the thing about it is that you do need someone who has the perspective to judge ideas and how things are going. So there's a process of generating maybe 1,000 ideas for a show. But if you're burnt out from being part of that generation, it's hard for you to pick what works.
Yeah.
And so, like at Girls, I was very involved in the writing, but I wouldn't go to the set because it was so well directed. There was no reason for me to be there. The footage always was great, and Lena and Jenny were great at monitoring the directors and directing themselves.
At what point did you have confidence to be like, all right, this thing is cruising?
Well, I don't think I ever felt like it was cruising, but I had confidence in if the script was good, they would shoot it great.
Right.
And then I could put all my energy into just reading the scripts to give them a person who could tell them if the scripts worked.
Right.
So they were tired from shooting and writing and they're exhausted. And I'm able to have a little more energy to just read and go on page 4. It's weird. Why'd they say that?
Right.
It's not tracking. And that's hard to do when you're in the thick of it and you're exhausted. And so there is a value to picking where you're helpful and where you're like, you don't need me here. I don't have to sit and look at over the director's shoulder. You're nailing it. Let me save that energy for the writing part.
I hate to admit this, but I actually enjoy being in the writer's room.
Oh, yeah.
I was like kicking and screaming, thinking about, oh, God, I'm a comedian. I'm free. Why the fuck am I going to go back into the math class or whatever? And I should say this, on days where it's working.
Yes.
When it's working and it's cruising and we're getting good notes, we always get good notes, but I mean positive notes from Netflix. Like, we enjoyed this. But then on the days where like, this doesn't really, there's too much of that. And then we go, all right. And then we try to fix it. And then it's just not working. Those are the days where I feel like I'm back in high school and I'm just it's like, is the clock broken? Like, what are we doing here? So,
well, you're the teacher. That's the thing. When you work on a show and you're not the teacher, like at the Larry Sanders Show, if we did a table read and it wasn't working, then suddenly there is someone upset with you.
Right.
And you are a shamed child that the script didn't work well. And you're like, how can I fix it? And there's almost a daddy or mommy character that you're disappointing if the show isn't working or if the script isn't working. There's a lot of ways for it to be super unhealthy, but it is more fun. You're right. When you're that person and you can treat people well and you have your own strong point of view, it's not as painful.
Yeah, I would say in my room, Mike Price he's the captain of the ship. So I'm the guy that sort of chimes in and tries to keep it like certain things tethered to reality if it starts getting a little too absurd. But you brought up Gary Shandling, who anybody who's even remotely into comedy, that guy's like on the Mount Rushmore there. And I just remember I watched this is the theme, the Gary Show. I watched his first one. I watched everything. I used to watch his Tonight Show sets. I just always just thought the guy, he just always, it was funny when I was in junior high, I was like in seventh grade, I knew that his stuff was just funnier.
Yeah.
That it was, this is like a different level. Like, this guy is better than all of these other guys. And I was wondering, like, what was that like, you know, because I sent an email about that. Like, I thought the Gary Shandling documentary that you did was that's my favorite thing you've done. And I have
thank you
40-year-old virgin and all this stuff. But what was that like? Because you were friends with somebody.
Sure.
Like that. You know, myself, I've lost a couple of friends, and I know that certain things, it just gets like really emotional. What was it? But I never delved into their life to the level that you did with Gary, who was like a friend and a mentor to you. Like, what was that process like? Like, how long did it take you to you know, because that was on par with, like, did you see that Eagles documentary?
Oh, I love that Eagles.
It was like 3 hours long, and it felt like it was 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I got through like a cross-country flight watching that. I felt like the Gary Shandling doc was like that. What was that like?
It was like the Eagles doc if Gary wasn't on coke.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because now that it's over, and I've been, you know, I finished it 6 or 8 months ago, something like that. Looking back, it's almost like a fever dream that I even did it.
Right.
Because he died. I was really depressed. It threw me more than I thought because he was a constant presence of support. And right. I didn't realize what an important beam he was in everything. And I thought, I think there's just a lesson that he wants to teach everybody. And I'll tell you a story that it kind of launched the documentary. Is that I went to Gary's cremation. And so Gary's cremation was
Jesus Christ.
I mean, people don't go to cremations. You're not supposed to go to cremation.
No, wait, you saw him like sliding the body in?
Well, kind of. It's
Jesus, Judd.
Basically, you know.
What the fuck?
Basically.
How did you get tickets to that?
I mean, and I only tell
StubHub?
I only tell this story because I think it's helpful to people in their own lives, is that, you know, a friend put together a very small service. So if you can imagine, there's only like 8 people there and, you know.
And an oven?
Basically. And like 4 Buddhist monks, right?
So that takes the edge off a little bit. Exactly. They're like, they're here. They're not freaking out.
Yeah, they were fine with it. That's their whole religion.
Okay.
So we go to this place and it's in the valley and it's not that far from these offices. And it's, you know, a crematorium.
Is it part of a strip mall that's like ramen noodles, get your tax done, watch your friend get burned?
Even worse.
All right.
It's deeper in the valley where it's just next to a place that, like, you know, makes glass bowls or something. It's
in
an industrial area. So we go there. It's clear no one's ever had a service in this space. This isn't what people do.
Right.
So there's no, like, room to do it. We're literally in, like, the lobby of a place that looks like a sham business of some place, right? And like what they're selling in the lobby, there's literally just like one desk, an empty space. And
did you make sure it was Gary underneath the
exactly.
sheet?
Exactly.
Like a fucking
we should have
crash
looked.
Test dummy? Like, that'll be 50 grand.
Like what they were selling there, they had these little pamphlets where you could take some of the ashes of your beloved and have them put into like a little glass figurine you could put on your table or like something you would wear.
Oh God, let it go. It's over. They're gone. They're gone.
So we go to this place and we go into this little room. And again, it's like it couldn't be rattier, really. And they have a service, which is very sweet and it's beautiful. And moving and all of the ideas of Buddhism and then they take us in this room. Now the room with the crematorium, it's like the kitchen to a restaurant. It's just like a big room with a cement floor and like 4 or 5
so did
ovens.
They did a little service. They hit some little fucking gongs or something. Like what happened?
Yeah, they did Buddhist prayers and they talked about Gary's life and what life is about. You live, you die, you learn the lessons that you can. You try to be as loving and kind as you can. Hopefully you grew. And it was very sweet.
That actually sounds cool. Now, do they believe in a heaven and hell, Buddhist people?
Here's my issue with Buddhism is that you get deeper and deeper into it. It heads to reincarnation, I believe. And I always get lost when things get too magical. I like something that's clear, like life is about being kind And that's it. Like, that's as far as I usually can get. I can't.
That's the script writer in you. Like, exactly. You need it to land.
I need it to land. As soon as it becomes magical in any way, as soon as someone's reborn or goes to heaven or hell, I'm lost. I have trouble. Now, I'm not 100% closed, but I'm pretty close. But I can get interested in ideas that are about how can we, you know, let go of our egos and be kind. That's all I need.
Okay.
So we have the service, and it's
so they bring you into the other room.
It's moving, and then we go in the other room, and it's literally, you know, a table with a cardboard coffin, and then they say some more prayers, and then at some point they open up an oven, which looks like almost like a dishwasher in a restaurant, and they roll it into.
Are the flames already going, or do they turn it on after they close the door?
There's a pilot light, and. And then
is it a Viking stove? Like, what do they stick in?
It's literally not that far from a pizza oven.
Okay.
Okay. And, you know, they put the cardboard coffin in, and they close it, almost like if a dishwasher in a restaurant. And then they ask who wants to push the button.
Oh, Jesus.
And, you know, they're saying...
Do they have a bunch of fake buttons, like a firing squad? Like somebody gets blanks and one guy really blows his brains out?
Yeah, no one wants to know who pushed the button. You don't want to carry that. And then a friend of Gary's, you know, pushed the button. And then suddenly you hear it fire up, you know, it's getting hotter than your normal pizza oven. And the room gets hot. And then... It's like you smell something burning. Like it's like, you know, if there was like a fire at your neighbor's house and suddenly like your chest hurts a little bit, then you realize it's Gary.
There's no vent?
I guess maybe it was a place that needed more ventilation. No, I mean, there is a vent. It's not like overpowering, like the room is all filled with smoke. But
So do you realize like someday if you go on a fast... To get rid of toxins in your body, part of that is Gary Shandling.
Exactly, and that would sadden me. But that's what was crazy about it. So now
I love Gary so much, I will never go on a fast after I breathe it. Wow.
And so I'm, you know, watching this, crying my eyes out, just bawling. It's as intense as anything I've ever experienced.
Yeah, this is pretty heavy.
And I'm feeling it in my chest, and I'm aware, like, that's Gary. We're breathing in Gary. And at first, it made me laugh. Like,
yeah, because this is super creepy, dude.
You know, it's creepy. It's kind of weirdly, like Gary always would make the joke, like, I'm inside you. You know, like there's like a sexual joke to be made there.
Right.
And then I just thought, God, Gary would find this so funny. All of us sitting here crying, watching them cremate his body. He would think that this was fantastic. Like me here bawling my eyes out, Gary would look and just go like, that's right. That's what it is. That's what it is. And I thought in that moment, this is a lesson. Like having to look at that will change your life. Having to be at the crematorium about, you know, what's important, what do we care about, how do we treat people, what do you want to do with your life? And I thought Gary wanted me here. He wanted me to go through this hell in this freaking... You know,
oh, is this part of his, like...
No, he didn't ask for it, but I just, on like a spiritual level, I thought, this is it. Gary wants me to learn every freaking lesson to the point of his incineration. He wants me to look it in the eye and take from it whatever I can take to be a better person. And I think in that moment was, you know, the seed of how do I tell other people this lesson? Because I think in Gary's life, he was trying to figure out how to talk about this stuff. And, you know, it's very hard in comedy to do it without seeming really corny or weird. Right. You know, as soon as people start talking about their spirituality in a sincere way, we're all like, shut the fuck up. And it feels
you
got
to be like interviewed by Oprah and she has to bring it out of you and act like, well, she asked me.
Exactly.
That's the only cool way to do it.
I mean, and I have so many friends that tried to and they always seemed odd. And I think Gary, when he did Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, was the first time he found a way to be really funny but talk about some things that he believed in. And I think that was his goal near the end of his life. He was trying to figure out how to reinvent how he did stand-up and get some of these ideas in. And he hadn't quite cracked it. He was really into silence. He loved not getting a laugh. He loved putting people through weird silences. Yeah. And he would say to the crowd, that's where it all is. It's all in that silence, right? And he didn't have a joke. He didn't even know what to do with it. He just knew when the room went dead.
Contemplating is what they're doing. They're contemplating what was just said.
And so when I was working on his memorial service, I cut together four or five little mini docs about Gary. And when I was making them, I thought, oh, yeah, there's a whole movie about Gary, about what he believed in, and that's how it started.
Well, it's incredible, and it just came out on Blu-ray.
Yeah,
people out there still have the Blu-ray players. You know, I still have a DVD VCR player, but my TV's too advanced, and I can't hook it up to that. So if anybody knows that there's some sort of adapter or some fucking thing I can do to try to make that work, I would appreciate it. But I gotta ask you this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I finally became a parent, so I had to get my affairs in order.
Yeah.
You know, as a guy, you got to make sure everybody's going to be okay.
You got the will?
I hooked my wife up so much, like, she has motive. Like, if I die suddenly.
I've had the conversation with my wife and the insurance agent. Have you done this conversation yet? Where you sit with an insurance agent about life insurance.
Yeah,
and he's saying, well, if Judd lives to this age, you get this. If he lives at this age, you get that. And it's gambling. You're gambling on me dying.
Yeah, you're betting against yourself. Like, aha, I died before you thought I was going to. Now you got to give him all this money.
And my wife wouldn't buy the extra insurance because she said, I feel really weird. You know, having any, you know,
handicap in your death.
and she was deeply upset at the conversation. That was like 6 or 7 years ago. And just the other day, she's like, maybe we should get that insurance.
Yeah. That's what happens after a while, you know, once you have kids and stuff. But like, I went with the cremation thing. I think it's so stupid to stick yourself in the box. And then you're that important that there's got to be like a headset. I guess it's for the living people to have some place to go. But I think now, just with the world population, I mean, the graveyards at some point, I mean, I don't know if they're going to dig deeper.
Yeah.
If you're going to be underneath somebody else. But I've had a lot of people go, well, what if you still feel stuff? And it's just like, well, then let's get it over with.
Which friend of yours thinks you still feel stuff?
A lot of people are afraid of death. It's just the stuff. You know something? I don't even know because my short-term memory is bad, but a lot of people say that about like, you know, if you get cremated, what if you still feel stuff? It's like, well, I'd rather just get it over with in a minute.
Yeah.
I guess I die again somehow in that minute. But rather than laying there waiting for the worms to slowly work their fucking way in.
Burn it. Just toss it out of an airplane.
This probably isn't legal in this country, but I want to do it like the Viking way. Like make a little ship.
Sure. Yeah.
Send me out there. Gives people shoot some flaming arrows, you know, give them make a little contest. It's like
burn it on the Ganges.
Yeah, it's like a clay pigeon type of thing. But anyways, what else we got? We got a benefit coming up too. That you're doing at the Gramercy for the Ronald McDonald House is one of the great charities out there. You can go to juddapatow.com/tour. That's January 15th. Is it Gramercy Theater?
Yeah, in New York. And it's Pete and John Mulaney.
Pete Holmes and John Mulaney.
Regina Spektor and some cast members from Crashing, Jabuki and Jamie Lee and me. And it's for the Ronald McDonald House, which is an amazing
monster
place.
Lineup. John Mulaney, I mean, that guy's just, he's just a...
In New York,
genius.
By the way. New York.
Genius guy. All right. What else can we discuss here? We've promoted. Your master class.
I have a master class.
We are in the presence of a does somebody approach you with with something like that? Like you want to I could teach a master class on how not to read out loud, how to fuck things up, how to make your wife mad at you for 3 days in a row.
Sure.
I have that mastered.
Three.
What was your master class?
Well, I did it because my friend Jay Roach, who directed Austin Powers, he directed my master class. So it's basically several days of talking to Jay Roach. Who's asking me questions.
Oh, there's no crowd or anything like that? It's not like a TED Talk or anything?
No, it's just, and they just edit it up. And I think it came out really well. You know, the thing you probably know, because you've worked with a lot of people and staffs, is so much of it is just inspiring people to work hard. People are so damn lazy. Like, people just don't put in the effort at all.
I told someone that the other day. I was like, look, you got to have a certain level of talent, but what separates people is just like, I mean, the people who have like that work ethic, and it's almost got to be like, and people in this business are kind of workaholics. Like, I've learned that with F is for Family. Some of these people, hey, want to go through it again? I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. I'm like, these people are fucking insane. Like, they don't want to go home. But the people that I saw, like, just really, really, really work. I don't want to name any names because then if I don't name names, people are saying, what are you saying? I'm fucking lazy. But I saw a lot of people that weren't the guy.
Yeah.
But worked their way, like, into being the guy. But, like, you know, with you, it's got to feel good when somebody comes and asks you to teach a master class. I mean, you certainly have the body of work and all the stuff that you've done. Because I think the last three times I've talked to you, that is what I've asked you. How do you – and my delegation of that shit, because I still want to be a comedian and still, you know, and the only way to still be in good is you have to be out there doing it. But if – how do I – you know, but I also love doing the show, and then I also got to be a dad. Like, how the fuck do you balance all this? So is some of that in there, the master?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, like, a lot of it is that you're just pushing balls forward. So you may be on the road doing stand-up, and you have a great idea for a movie, and it's just making sure in some consistent way you're pushing it forward and making progress. Now, you might finish it in 3 months. You might finish it in 3 years.
Right.
But if you have four or five things going at the same time, that's really what it is. Is, you know, I might get up in the morning and go, from the moment I get up till lunch, I'm going to work with Pete. And in the afternoon, you know, I'm doing a movie with Pete Davidson. I'm gonna rewrite Pete Davidson. And then
you do you ever get burned out? Do you get frustrated? Do you lose your temper? You seem like a chill guy. Is this like is this how you are? Or like you behind the scenes, you... one of those guys throwing laptops like, it doesn't work. We're going to stay here all night.
Where I only get crazy on two issues, two or three issues. One is if the food order is wrong, I can't handle it. Like if they don't bring the salsa with the burrito, like I so reward myself with
that,
food.
That could go viral.
That could go bad.
You're flipping out. That's okay. That's understandable.
My biggest moments of shame where I go, you really lost it, are mainly around food. But the areas where I get crazy, one is people would tell me I couldn't have my casting. And that would always drive me crazy. If I said, you know who the star of the show should be? It should be Jason Segel. Mm-hmm. And then Fox would go, no. That's where my head would explode.
And where would you explode? On the phone to them? In your car? To your windshield?
Every scenario. I mean, I'd be screaming. I'd be in tears. I would be threatening. I'd have agents calling. And I never won as a result. It took me years to realize, oh, all my emotional reactions have never won me the fight. And then when I stopped behaving that way, I started winning more of those debates. But I would get so upset because, to me, the worst thing in the world is if, you know, you have an edit of a movie and someone forces you to change it and you've ruined your own movie due to someone else's thoughts.
How often has that happened?
Well, that's the one area I just can't allow to happen. Now, I have had things change in the past that I look back at more so, you know, a couple of decades ago where I did give in. And even right now, if I thought about that movie, I'd be like, oh, why'd we cut that scene? They told us to cut that scene. And there was a scene in...
And did you feel because you were young and just trying to get your foot in the door?
Yeah.
Everybody always says that thing. You know, you got to let them get you the first time. And then the next time you'll be able to write your own ticket. Now, do you subscribe to that?
Well, I think it's true only in the sense that you can't win. You just don't have the power.
Right.
So we made this movie Heavyweights and Paul Feig was in it and Stiller played the bad guy. It was a summer camp for fat kids and it was a Disney movie. And then when we finished it, Steve Brill directed it and wrote it with me. It was just a little darker than any Disney movie you've ever seen. And it ended
Funny.
Yeah, it was funny and not in the way that a lot of those movies are.
Yeah.
And Stiller, at the end of the movie, he's lost his mind. He's the owner of this fat camp, and he's like this like demented Tony Robbins guy. And he's got a bow and arrow, and he's like threatening to kill all the children.
Right.
And Disney said, you know, you really can't have him like pointing bow and arrows at children who are like 3 feet away.
Right.
And so we had to re-edit the sequence. That's the kind of stuff I'll wake up at 2 a.m. and go, why'd we cut out the goddamn bow and arrow sequence?
Still eats at you.
And I might have 5 of those. And so that's where I can not
so
be
So what
pleasant.
Point in your career were you like, all right, Judd, screaming at people and flipping out during these moments isn't working.
Yeah.
Like how did you – because I am like – my big Achilles heel is – it's not – but it's funny. It's not at work. I don't flip out.
Yeah.
in comedy clubs. I've never flipped out at F as a Family. I've raised my voice. I'm like, Jesus Christ, how do we fuck about? But I never like got to the point of like, you know, never had a big, you know, storm out, fucking throwing shit. Never had one of those. But like, it's more like at home. I flip out about just stupid shit. Like I fucking suck at these iPhones and laptops. I get so I'm so frustrated because I don't like them. Technology doesn't fascinate me. It's not something I'm interested in.
It's ruined the world.
So you know. In ways it has it, and other ways it hasn't. Medically, it's nice.
When your kid's older and they don't look up at you for hours, you'll go, they ruin the world.
Yes. That aspect of it. But I definitely I just don't like how yesterday I knew how to use this device and then now I don't. Now I have to go through this fucking bullshit. It's just every time, you know, you move 3 feet ahead, they knock you back with the new, you know, updated system. And then you can't opt out of not updating it because you used to be able to keep your phone for years. And it's just like, no, we're going to fill up this fucking phone until you have to bring it in. And then we're going to take everything off it and sell it to some kid in the Philippines. And you just feel like you're just part of this thing. And like, that's the type of shit. Like I'm trying to, you know, and I'm failing miserably at it.
But explain the flip out. Is it alone, like throwing it against the wall? Are you yelling at another person? Like, what does it turn into?
I just literally, like, my wife will be just totally chilling watching TV. And then out of nowhere, I'll just be like, you got to be fucking kidding me, you fucking piece of shit. I flip out like that. And like, what I don't know, because I grew up with that. I didn't understand what it was doing to her as far as just really just having her be on edge. And, so, I mean...
How does she tell you not to do it? What's her approach to telling you to chill out?
Oh, man, she's just straightforward. She's straightforward. She said some shit. I'm not going to, you know, this is too intimate a detail, but she said some shit to me like 2 days ago that I will never forget. And I was like, wow.
Well, because when you have a kid, it changes everything because she knows you're about to do it in front of a child that understands it. So when they're little, they're babies and you can go in the other room. But at some point, you just spend so much time with your kid that they will absorb it.
Yeah.
And then you go, do I like the way I move in the world? Because I think my kid's going to copy it.
Yeah. So fortunately, I am really on my best behavior for the most part around my kid. She's seen me flip out a few times, but I quickly try to turn it into a joke. But it's something. Yeah, I got to go to therapy, dude, because I don't want to. Because she's getting to the point now where she's repeating stuff, and I just don't. I don't want to. This is the deal. She's not going to be like me. Yeah. I already know she's not going to be like me, as far in a good way. So I mean, that's kind of what does that say about me? Like my job as a dad is to make my kid not like me.
Well, the one thing I've
learned, you're half me, but I don't want you to be me at all. I want you to be like your mom.
Well, they don't really have the damage of us, you know. So that's the thing I've noticed is, you know, my kids are hilarious, but they're neurotic kids too. But they didn't go through some of the intense things that I went through that really built how my mind works.
Right.
But I'm sure they have their own. Their own menu.
I bet there's a whole new level of shit with just like social media didn't exist. Yeah. So like what I liked about my childhood was once school was over, the ass kicking was over. Whatever thing, humiliation, I could go home. It was fine. It didn't continue. Yeah.
The Mike Douglas show was on. You'd watch it.
Yeah.
You'd heal.
Yes. Yes. There wasn't this think tank of kids trying to, you know, getting all online and piling you in the shit that they deal with. So.
And they know when... they're being excluded. So the biggest issue is because of Instagram, you're aware what you've been invited to. So when people are hanging out, you're like, oh, they didn't want me at this thing. When I was a kid, I was excluded by everybody. I had one or two really good friends. But basically, if I think about it now, I was excluded from every possible social thing that was happening.
You weren't passed at the club.
but I didn't know it. You know, I just would go home every day and just watch the Dinah Shore show and be fine and wait for my friends to get back from football. But now the kids know, like, oh, those three girls went to the mall. Oh, those two are hanging out at this concert. And they feel bad.
No, and then they take a picture, which is not an accurate depiction of what – it's like they're selling the movie of, like, their life or anything. So that's the that's the thing I get nervous with, and that's been, you know, a source of, you know, back and forth. Me and my wife is like, I don't like her watching TV and all of this shit, and I don't like her eating junk food, and, you know, and she has more of like, look, she wants a little bit of TV. She occasionally has McDonald's, and it's just like, it's It's like, all right, but you know, I mean,
this is the fights you have because
yeah.
you, when you're married, you're instantly deciding how much do I care about each thing and what, how far do I want to push my wife? Like in Knocked Up, one of the scenes that I like, but it's a intense scene, is Leslie sitting there and she's looking at a website that tells her where sexual predators live in the neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And Paul comes in and he just keeps making jokes about it. And she's really freaked out. Like, do you know there's a guy like three streets over? And Paul keeps making jokes yeah. like, well, let's not go to his house on Halloween. And then finally she's like...
That's what I would do.
And then she finally says like, sometimes I just want to rip your fucking head off because you're so fucking stupid. And that really is what marriage is about, is there are issues that you care about. Like, how much McDonald's should a kid eat? Now, when I was a kid, I swear to God, I had McDonald's, I'm not kidding you, 6 times a week.
And I loved it.
I ate it. My mom had no issue taking me there every single time.
We used to go out as a family. Like, it was fine dining. We go out there. We had a big family. So it was 5 cheeseburgers, 5 small fries, 5 chocolate shakes, 2 Big Macs, 2 large fries, 2 Cokes. That was the order for years.
And it was awesome every time.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, and I used to be jealous when I got older because I kept getting a cheeseburger, and I was big enough to get a quarter pounder with cheese, but I was afraid to ask because you get shit. And I just would be looking at theirs, and they were only like halfway through it with their little mouths trying to eat it, and I had wolfed mine down. But, yeah, I remember when I was real young and I lived on the North Shore of Boston, I remember there was a McDonald's, and there was this train track that was right by, and you would throw some of your French fries to the seagulls, and you get to see a train go by, and you'd be sitting outside, and it was like some of my fondest memories as a kid. And, you know, there was no, you know, they were roughly the same age. So it was just all, you know, peanut butter and fluff and all of these, you know.
And there's nothing bad about it. When did you even realize McDonald's was bad? And what, like, how old were you when you were like, I guess I shouldn't eat this?
Well, you knew fast food was bad, but you didn't know to the point, like, I mean, McDonald's, remember a few years ago, they had a billboard just came out, and it's like, now with 100% beef, which is obviously, well, what the fuck was it before?
The pink
slime. Did you watch that movie Founder with Michael Keaton?
No.
Oh, you got to watch that. Michael Keaton's amazing in that movie, and it's such a well done movie about like all of that type of stuff. So,
but then you know your wife says I want to give the kid some McDonald's, and you're like, I think it might be awful. No, I have the
poisoned.
I have the reverse with my wife. Which
it used to be poison. I think now it's more like it's a little more healthy, right?
Now it might be just nothing.
Yeah, like, I don't know.
It's blank, no positive anything. But my wife early in our relationship, when I would get McDonald's, would look at me like, what is wrong with you? Are you an adult? Like, you eat this food? She was so disgusted. She shamed me to such an extent that I don't even sneak out and get it. Like, she programmed me to be disgusted by the thing that made me so happy.
Yeah. My thing was when I was going to be healthy, I went to Wendy's because Wendy's seemed like it was actually burger meat.
Yeah. It probably wasn't either.
No, it probably wasn't. Well, dude, I got to tell you, man, it's such a thrill to have someone like you come on the show, and I really appreciate the advice both on this and on off that you've given me as far as like how to, you know, keep it all kind of going without screwing it up. And I'm definitely going to check out that masterclass that you were in. Everybody check out January 15th at the Gramercy, Hotel, Gramercy Theater. I mean, John Mulaney, Pete Holmes, Judd Apatow for the Ronald McDonald House. It's going to be go to juddapatow.com/tour. Once again, season 3 of Crashing with the great Pete Holmes.
In January,
Gary Shanley documentary is on Blu-ray, and it's masterclass.com where you can just, I guess, imagine search Judd Apatow.
And Pete Holmes' new special airs, I think, on the 15th, which is he's got a great new stand-up
special. What's it called?
It's called Dirty Clean.
Dirty Clean, and where can they see that?
That'll be on HBO.
On HBO. I love it. Oh, this, why wouldn't it be on HBO? He's in biz with them. All right, Judd. Thank you so much for coming in. And
thank
everybody,
you,
thank you for listening. And check out Judd Apatow, January 15th, Gramercy Theater. All right, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.